Good afternoon. I'm convening this meeting of the House Committee on Revenue. It's Tuesday, February 9th. Can we have a roll call, please?
Representative Hernandez?
Absent.
Representative Levy?
Here by video.
Representative Marsh?
Marsh is here by video.
Representative Smith?
Representative Smith is here by video.
Vice Chair Pham?
Present by video.
Vice Chair Reschke?
Reschke present by video.
Madam Chair Nathanson?
Present by video. Thank you. We have three items on our agenda. We will take them in the order that they were printed. The first is, I'm opening an informational meeting on the transient lodging tax. Mr. Alanak.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. So this is continuing those kind of mini orientations that we had, that the chair talked about at the beginning of the session. And so this is a topic specific tied to the two bills you'll be hearing later. It's the transient lodging tax overview, and Mazen Malik is the economist who works in this area.
Yes, Madam Chair, co-chairs, members of the committee, for the record, Mazen Malik with Legislative Revenue Office. And as you said, it's going to be a mini presentation, real mini. And I would like to start by taking my glasses off first and then sharing my screen and going from that to the presentation that we have.
Mr. Malik, excuse me for just a moment. There are a couple of people who are not muted at the present time, and if they would please mute, that will just help make sure that we hear you clearly with no extraneous sounds. Thank you very much.
Okay
go ahead.
All right, so this is just an overview of the transient lodging tax, and I just want to go through a quick history. The genesis and the start of the transient lodging tax was in House Bill 2267 of the 2003 session. And just to add a historical note here, this was the longest session in history. And that bill made it towards the end of that session. So it just barely made it by about the end of August. And what the bill did at that time, it established the transient lodging tax and basically imposed a rate of 1% on all consideration rendered of transient lodging. And this primarily came with the agreement on a moratorium of the use of local transient lodging tax, and that the local governments will no longer levy transient lodging tax for their general uses, but only do it for tourism promotion, and made some conditions of not reducing current tourism promotions and so on. However, it still left the door open for any local government who wanted to impose a new transient lodging tax to do their own general fund type of things. And the conditions that 70% of that new tax would be for tourism-related promotion and facilities, and 30% would be for the general fund of the local government. And of course, because that was so late in the 2003 session, and just like with any new legislation and a new tax program that was established, there were a lot to be fixed. So in the 2005 session, House Bill 2197 came and fixed a lot of the definitions and what is applicable to which facilities, as you see here, and who and how all these things are considered and how they pay. And of course, it also gives certain exemptions from who needs to, or who the tax applies to. And these were healthcare facilities and youth programs, youth camps, and emergency temporary shelters and so on. And it also exempted persons, and that's primarily somebody who rents for more than 30 days, assuming that more than 30 days is not transient anymore, but it is actually rent. So if it's more than 30 days, consecutive days, it is not included in the definition. And of course, federal employees and official businesses were also exempt. So that continued in a lot of ways, fine and well, until the 2013 with House Bill 2656. What came new at that time is all these online intermediaries that started getting into the market of transient lodging or hotel, motel, and so on. So all of these started showing up in a different capacities and taking a bigger share of the market. The law came through House Bill 2656 to actually fix and reaffirm that the transient lodging tax does include intermediaries, and it applies to them because it has against all consideration, and added all these different type of definitions of what is a lodging tax provider versus a tax collector, and how the intermediaries work in that, both on the state TLT tax and the local. So both of these apply to state and local transient lodging taxes.
Mr. Malik, is there, I'm wondering if I'm just having a technical glitch. Is there something that we should be seeing on our screen right now, like a chart or an illustration of something?
I'm thinking it is. If it's not coming, then
Are others seeing it, and I just have a problem with my display? Oh, okay. Thank you.
Is everybody's saying okay?
No, we're not seeing a presentation right now.
Okay. Well, let me try. Is it coming through now?
I don't think so. We can have one of maybe Manny can pull it up, or
yes, it is on the meeting materials, so you could pull it up from there. I am on slide 5.
Okay, we'll wait just a moment to see if another LRO staff person can figure it out for us. I'll just wait a few seconds. Oh, right. That's great.
There it is.
And can you make it the slideshow instead of the actual the software where you can do the editing? Can you just make it the slideshow?
This is just being pulled up through OLIS right now. How about that?
Mr. Alanak, what I'm going to, you already got it for us. Thank you so much. Okay.
Excellent. So, right. So, this is the time that we, of course, as I was saying, dealt with the issues of intermediaries, and these are the online portals that do the transient lodging or hotels and motels and other types of transient lodging. In addition to all of the definitions and including them as part of who is a collector and who collects the money and sends it to the state, one of the most important changes that House Bill 2656 did is that it defined the base of what the tax applies to, and it applies to the price, or what we call the final price. This you would see in the final bullet, the final price that includes all the services, including cleaning, resort fees, and so on. In the past, it used to be only the amounts that actually charged by the establishment, and everything else on top of it was not part of that price. With doing that, it just included the final price as a type of the base where the tax applies. And if we go to the next slide here, the other major event that occurred with the transient lodging tax came in the 2016 session. This was House Bill 4146. And I think it was at that time championed by Representative Nathanson. She wasn't the chair of the Revenue Committee at that time, but she championed that bill. And that bill basically increased the rate, the transient lodging tax rate, from 1% to 1.8% for that time, starting July 2016, up to June 30th, 2020. After that, starting July 1st, 2020, the rate drops back to 1.5%. Now, there were other changes by the bill. The bill actually made a lot of different changes into the program, the transient lodging tax program. It changed the distributions, especially to the regional amounts, that brought them to about 20% from 15%. That was discretionary then, made them 20% mandatory now, and added 10% grant for tourism efforts. And then the 10% for matching grants, that also was accompanied by change of definition of what you could spend that money on. And it was it came to allow for expenditure on tourism related facilities and tourism generating events, including sporting events. That opened the door, of course, for some of the financing for the World Track events in Eugene. The regional allocation formula also changed and went through a different changes, the study group also was put together in order to study and make sure all these things are where we want them to be. And if we go to the next slide, the quick things that happened in 17, 18, and 19 sessions. We had more enforcement and compliance, especially on the interactions between the Department of Revenue Collection mechanisms and arms and locals, and the ability for DOR to collect for locals if they choose to, and allowing for information sharing in House Bill 20, and House Bill 3180 in 2017. 2018, it made even more emphasis on enforcement that probably at that time generated about $600,000. In 2019, I believe most of these bills were also were championed at that time with Representative Marsh, and basically gave $900,000 for a pilot to do collection by location and geographical information rather than the regional type of information that we get now, because the reporting now is in by regions. And it also the 3137 allowed collaboration, streamlining, and finally 3138, House Bill 3138 of the 2019 made sure that the 30-day per year limitation does not include intermediary, because they do that as part of their business, not as part of the individual type of transaction. And if we go to the next one, and we'll start basically looking, the way this tax is done is the Department of Revenue collects from about 3,200 payers. You have about $40 million a year. The Department of Revenue is allowed to keep up to 2% of collection. That does not mean they spend 2% of collection, but by law they're allowed to do that. What they actually spend becomes a function of their budget through Ways and Means. And then the intermediaries and the administrative, the businesses actually collect for the state and send it. And accordingly, in law, the tax collector is allowed to retain 5% for that burden of administration. So then the Department of Revenue sends the money to Travel Oregon monthly. And if we go to the ninth, then you would see the different regions that the Department of Revenue sees as, these are the 10 regions of collection. I'm not sure if we mentioned it or not, but the 10 regions of collections from the state do not necessarily translate into the expenditure regions. Those are slightly different, and about 7 rather than 10. But the regions are shown here in order to prep for the coming slides. And slide 10 would show you the lodging tax receipts. And this is by a fiscal year. So when you're looking at the 2020 fiscal year, this ends in the end of June 2020. So it includes the first two quarters. And if you see from the chart here, you see the increase by House Bill 4146 of 2016, increase in rate, how it bumped up the tax receipts. However, the decrease that you see at this time, 2020, reflects the new COVID realities, but does not yet reflect the decrease in rates. That will come, I'll show you that in the coming slides. So that gives you an idea or a kind of flavor of what kind of reductions the tax and the business, basically, transactions on transient lodging started showing in 2020. And remember, 2020, the closures and the issues of that started around March. So all of that is probably a result of about only 3 months of reductions. If we go to the next slide, I'm sure some of you have seen this report. This was in the Portland Business Journal, and it shows how the hotel industry is suffering from the difficulties of COVID and other issues and lately, and they show that 81% reduction from the period of July to December. That's from 17.9 to 3.3. remember, this would be the local transient lodging tax, but it gives you a flavor of how severe the city of Portland is looking at the reductions in business. And if we look into that and how it compares to the rest of the state, we would go to the next slide. So remember that first chart I showed you was fiscal years. This would be calendar years. And the calendar years means it includes all the way to the end of 2020. And you would see now the reduction from 2019 to 2020 going to about 27.2. However, because of the 6 months from July 1st, 2020 until December, remember, there was a reduction in rates from 1.8 to 1.5. That reduction in rates translates to about 2.6 million. And that's what you see at the top of the small slice at the top of the 2020. So if you wanna look at what the reductions in total was, if you look at just the whole reduction on face value, it was a 35% reduction. However, if you figure what was the reduction and discounting the reduction in the tax rate, the decline would be about 29%. So if we keep going with the slides, now this gives you a flavor of how it works in a regional way. You would see that the Portland Metro and the Willamette Valley, basically this is in millions, this is in dollars, how they have the practically lion's share of tax receipts by region. And if we look at this in a different way in the next slide, in a slightly different cut and see it by share or market share or regional shares, you would see how the metro region is about 40% and about 12% for the Willamette Valley. But you also notice that the share of the metro region and the Willamette Valley are decreasing from the total. And the coastal regions, you would look at the North Coast, Central Coast, and South Coast, are the ones that actually have seen an increase in the shares of how much business and transactions that they are seeing. Of course, Central Oregon also showed a slight increase, but it maintains itself basically. Now, if we look at the collections and do a different cut in the next slide, and you see it by accommodation type, the largest on the lion's share here comes to be the hotels. Next to it is motels and vacation homes and so on. And you would see how the hotels are still very large in essence, but they're slightly reducing. And when you're reducing 1 or 2% from something really big, it is effective. And here, the thing that is worth noting is how the lodging intermediaries, and those are the OTCs, the online companies, how they started moving from the time from 2014 of being about only 2.65 of the pie to about 19% as of 2019. You see how that legislation, as it started capturing their market share and how their business model works, it started looking into capturing more. In addition to that, they're actually transitioning a lot of the business is transitioning from the old model to renting and giving business through these intermediaries. One more look in the next slide to just go through quickly what happened is the latest. Remember that the thing that happened, or the most important step that happened in 2016 was the increase in the rates, and that continued for fiscal 17, 18, 19, and 20. The increase itself at that time was about 18 million a year. Rate decreased this last July 1st of 2020, 41 million a year will go down to about 33.8. That's not including the COVID effects. Reduction of about 6.8 million a year, 3.6 in a biennium. So far, we've witnessed about 3 million, 2.9 in these 6 months that we've seen. Impact of COVID, about 29% decrease. On the longer term, I think this would probably be connected to the overall tourism economy and how that recovers in the state of Oregon. And the forecast for that is the recovery will happen, but it will take about 4 to 5 years to come back to where we are today, or where we were before COVID. And in the last two slides, slide 17, shows how these reductions by region. And you would see these reductions are the comparison from the quarter to quarter. So the first quarter of 2019 to the first quarter of 2020, and then second quarter and third quarter. And here it's can't escape the eye is the plunge in the Portland metro area. In the second quarter, reductions of about 86.5%. But, and overall, of course, is 68.9%. But if you, for the third quarter, it's 28.8%. The one thing that also attracts the attention, which also, in a way, is it's been talked about in different places, but it wasn't necessarily confirmed until now. We're starting to see the stats, is that you see the coastal areas are still starting to recover, and you would have this type of discussion that happened with a lot of people saying that they move into vacation homes to different places in the coast to do the online working and remote type of working. So there is some evidence of that you could see. There is some of this, a lot of this is
for me, it seems like we're stuck on audio. Mr. Alanak, can you confirm?
I believe that's correct. We might have lost a connection with Mazin. So he was just about done. We can, if you want to stand at ease or if you want to move to the public hearings.
Let's see. I think the contents of that particular slide aren't that critical for the discussion right now. normally we would ask the committee if they would like to ask some questions or make comments of LRO before we move to the public hearing. I think we won't do that right now. Committee, if we're able to reestablish the connection with Mr. Malik, we'll be able to ask questions of him in a little while. And if that doesn't work, we'll ask them of Mr. Alanak. He may have the answers, or we may get the responses in writing to the committee after today. But I think the most efficient thing to do right now is to move to the public hearing, if that's okay with everybody. Okay, it looks okay. Mr. Alanak, I'm ready to move to a public hearing, and I have a witness registration page for 2500, not for 2521. Am I good to go on those in order, one at a time?
Yes, you are.
Thank you. I'm opening a public hearing on House Bill 2500. Can you just briefly present that for us?
Sure, Madam Chair. House Bill 2500 increases the state transient lodging tax rate from 1.5% to 1.8%. And right now, the way it's drafted, it would take effect on the 91st day following Sunny Day.
Okay. And as I recall the history of developing this piece of legislation, it was based on bills that had been in process in the previous year, just didn't get processed because legislative business wasn't completed in a number of areas in that year. So we merely redrafted legislation that was kind of already in the works. And that's why we're seeing this one. Is that a fair characterization?
That is my recollection as well, Madam Chair.
Okay, so committee, that's the circumstances, that's the history of how this bill is in front of us. This bill was in the works in the prior year, and we just had it redrafted to bring forward. Okay, we've had a description of the bill. I am ready for public testimony. I have four people signed up to testify, and I'm going to call on you just in the order that they appear on my sheet. Bennett Minton will be first, second Marjorie Taylor, third Xanne Culver, and fourth Bill Perry. Mr. Minton, you're first.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, can you hear me?
Yes.
Great. I'm watching you on video, and there's about a 1 minute delay. So it's been very confusing to watch the presentation, but I'm pleased to be with you on the phone. For the record, I'm Bennett Minton, speaking on behalf of Tax Fairness Oregon, which is a network of volunteers who support a rational and equitable tax code. TFO supports restoration and permanent extension of the 0.3% transient lodging tax. As you were just saying, the committee approved a similar extension bill a year ago, but the legislature was unable to act on it because of the walkout. We're back in the same spot now, and we submit the same statement we did then. We urge the legislature to study the taxes imposed on tourism with an eye to compensating Oregon for state goods and services tourists consume and to sharing equitably the tax tourists pay for lodging. My longer submitted testimony includes my year-old research on lodging taxes for cities in every state. Then Oregon ranked last in taxation of tourists. The state has no general sales tax, the primary way 46 states and Washington, D.C. tax visitors. Because Oregon does not, we wonder whether our lodging rates should be among the highest and at least above the national average of 13.5%. Making permanent the 0.3% should only be a start. The amount of tax and what the tax funds are related questions. The power to impose taxes is a government function. The power to dispense is a legislative function. But in this case, the legislature has surrendered spending authority over the lodging tax to Travel Oregon. Most agencies come before the legislature to justify their budgets, but Travel Oregon has a direct funding line. We believe tourism agencies should not have a siphon in state and local treasuries. Our representatives, state and local, should appropriate from their budgets using the power we, the taxpayers, entrust to you. We understand that the tourist industry has been hammered for almost a year in Oregon, the nation, and the world. The drop in demand has nothing to do with this tax. We assume demand will rebound. And when it does, Travel Oregon will continue to have unimpeded access to a slush fund. Time to pull out the siphon and let the agency compete for funding like every other that goes before the Ways and Means Committee. Thank you for the time.
Thank you for your testimony. Because the witness list is in an order where they're sort of unrelated to each other, I'll pause now and ask the committee, does anyone have questions or comments for Mr. Minton? Not at this time. Okay, but can you stay on the line with us in case something comes up?
Please do.
Thank you. Next, Marjorie Taylor.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Marjorie Taylor, the legislative director for the Department of Revenue. And with me, I also have Exan Culver. Our comments today are related to the administration of this tax change, in that what we would recommend is, if this is moving forward, that we ensure that perhaps the change occurs on the beginning of a calendar quarter. That would ease taxpayer compliance and administration of this change with the agency. And Exan can certainly provide additional information about the impact with regard to that taxpayer compliance.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Chair Nathanson, members of the committee. I am Exan Culver with the Oregon Department of Revenue. As Marjorie mentioned, the tax rate change would be best to occur on the first day of the calendar quarter, and that occurs four times a year. So the choice is up to the committee which one of those it would be. The tax is collected, as Mazin had mentioned in his presentation, the tax is collected by either the lodging provider or the intermediary, which is the online travel company, or they have an online booking platform. And then they are required to remit that to the department on a quarterly basis. So it would be remitted to the department the month following the calendar quarter end. And for their ease in collecting that tax, it would be best for the rate change to begin on the first day of the calendar quarter. And then what they do is they report those receipts for that entire month to us on that one return. The way that our return is currently structured is it only allows for one tax rate per quarter. And so a rate change during the middle of a quarter would require us to add a new section to the return and do configuration changes to account for that additional tax rate during that one quarter in which the rate changes. So that concludes my remarks on this. And we, either Marjorie or I, will be happy to answer questions.
Thank you. Representative Reschke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Marjorie and Exan, good to see you both again. Just a quick question. So your request is for an amendment to be drafted to this bill so that the change happens on the beginning of a calendar quarter, or I'm trying to understand it. Are you requesting that an amendment would be in the bill, or is that not in the bill right now?
Chair Nathanson and Representative Reschke, yes. Should the committee choose to move forward with this legislation, yes, we would recommend that it be amended so it's clear that the new tax rate apply at the beginning of a calendar quarter.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions for Department of Revenue? Next on the list is Bill Perry.
Okay, Chair, can you hear me?
I can, and anyone who's not testifying right now can go on mute. Hi, Mr. Perry, go ahead.
Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, Bill Perry for the Oregon Restaurant and Lodging Association. I appreciate the opportunity to testify today, and I appreciate Representative Marsh and the committee members for putting this in. Obviously, we were supportive of the increase before it sunsetted last year, and we worked with many different partners and built kind of a collaborative effort. But since that time, the rate has gone down. I'm not sure that everybody that was involved in the last process has been involved in this process. And so, as most of you know, the biggest problem our industry has is at the local level, most of the taxes still go to fund general government. And it's one of the few examples where a specific industry-specific tax goes to general government or goes to a general purpose. So like a gas tax, even at a local level, goes to roads. So when you look at industry-specific taxes, they're usually associated with something that are direct connection to the people being taxed. So our concern with moving this in a full session, if you look at these discussions, they've generally happened in the short sessions, is that anytime you have a tax, is that we have a feeling that somebody else is going to want the money. So you're going to tax our industry kind of at the expense of the industry, and it'll go to other purposes. So at this point in time, even though we do generally support promotional dollars, I think it makes most of our members nervous to move forward with this proposal in this particular time frame as people are in search of money. So I'd be happy to answer any questions, but I guess that's it.
Thank you. Representative Pham.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I just wanted to clarify for Mr. Perry. You mentioned that this is not the approach that you would recommend. Can you share what your proposed or your group's proposed approach would be in terms of the dollars?
Well, it's Representative Pham, Chair Nathanson, and members of the committee. No, this proposal is the way we would support it, and it's meaning that if you're going to tax our industry, we would like it to go to promotions, which is what this particular bill does. And basically, it is one of the true partnerships with a state and a local where you actually, it increases economic development, which helps restaurants, retail businesses, many different things. So we like it. What our fear is that you move forward in a session, there are already bills out there that spend lodging tax on other things unrelated to tourism. And so it's just our concern that if you have this discussion at this time of year, it'll be amended and the money won't be going to where the current flow of money is going today. Does that answer your question?
Yes, thank you very much. Mm-hmm.
Other questions for Mr. Perry? I'd like to add one. Mr. Perry, you mentioned, I think you might have used the word something like most of the money going to general government. Mm-hmm. Can you say a little bit more about that? Because the understanding is that most of the money should be going toward promotion or supporting the industry in a way that, for example, attracting tourists to a certain region, certain locations, certain activities, and so forth. So can you just explain that a little better for the committee who, some of the members of the committee have less time working on this than Representative Marsh and I do.
Thanks, Chair Nathanson's member of the committee, and most is probably not the biggest benefactor, let me put it that way, is still general fund services at a local level. And so what that means is if you go back to 2018, which is the last kind of set of numbers I have, there was about $230 million raised in local lodging taxes across the state. So that's kind of the whole. And if you look at 110 jurisdictions actually have a general fund program, money going to general fund programs, and that's about 36% of the money. Only 79% or 79 local governments have tourism promotion, and that makes up about 21% of the money, or about $48 million. So if you look at the difference between those two things, you know, tourism promotion is less than that. Now, outside of that, those don't add up to 100%. There's bonds for like the convention center, those kinds of things. Some money goes to chambers. There's different events that might get funded particularly indirectly. So, I mean, there's water programs. There's all these different little pieces of it. But, you know, it's once again, most of the programs and the biggest chunk of the money still goes to general fund, but that's all kind of pre 2003 allocations that were beforehand. Did I answer your question?
Yes, that did. And I do want to make it very, very clear for this record that there is a difference between the local transient lodging taxes and the state transient lodging tax. Two different sets of money. There's the state tax, and then local jurisdictions had or have or may have local taxes added on top of that. And you're talking about the local part, not the state part.
Yes.
Good. Just wanted to be very clear. Thank you very much. Any additional questions or comments? Rep. Pham, your hand is up. You have another question?
Apologies, Madam Chair. I left it up by accident, but I would like to ask Mr. Perry about the evaluation method. Since we are talking about the state transient lodging tax, I am curious about the evaluation methods to ensure that if we are investing in the tourism marketing efforts of Travel Oregon to promote tourism, how do we ensure that our public dollars are getting an effective return? How do we make sure that we are supporting your industry to make sure people are coming? How do you measure that effectiveness?
Thank you for the question, Representative Pham and Chair Nathanson, members of the committee. So a couple of different ways to answer that. First, and I think Todd Davidson's on here, and he could probably much more eloquently answer the question, but they do.
I'm not sure.
I think we might be stuck again. You know what? I know that we have. I hesitate to talk. Oh, good. No more echo, I hope. We have available Mr. Todd Davidson from Travel Oregon. Mr. Davidson, are you available to respond to the question that was just posed?
Chair Nathanson, Representative Pham, I am happy to do that. And regret Bill being frozen as he is, but please allow me to address Representative Pham's question. First of all, since for a number of years, and I would go back to since my coming on board at Travel Oregon, we have undertaken, for example, advertising accountability studies. So we're actually going back into the markets where we were looking for our advertising to influence trips to Oregon to determine if indeed that happened.
Excuse me, Mr. Davidson, even though I asked you to join us, for the purpose of the recording, you need to identify yourself first.
Of course.
Sorry.
Of course. No, that's quite all right. My apologies. For the record, my name is Todd Davidson, and I have the privilege and pleasure of serving as the CEO at Travel Oregon. And to the question, the advertising accountability studies that I referenced are an opportunity where we're able to measure the effectiveness of our advertising campaigns. Were we indeed generating trips out of these markets that we were buying advertising within? And so we undertake those studies roughly every 2 years. Those studies are available on our website. I would be more than happy to provide you and the committee with the results of that. But that is one mechanism. Probably one of the chief points that I would make, and I see Bill is unfrozen, and I'm not sure if this was the point he might make, but in 2003, when the lodging tax was initiated and Travel Oregon established as it is, the makeup of the commission was changed. And the makeup of the commission now, of the 9 members of the commission, 5 represent the lodging sector. Okay, so they're coming from the industry, the sector of the industry that is being taxed. So 5 of the 9 members, a majority of the members, are representing the lodging sector. 3 represent the tourism industry at large and don't include lodging, and then 1 member is a public at large member. So my point in emphasizing that is that the commission retains the sole authority to approve the marketing plan, the strategic plan, and the budget of the commission. So that is their authority. Prior to them doing that, that plan and budget is shared with the governor, shared with the industry trade associations, shared with the legislature for review and recommendation, and then it goes before public hearing with the Tourism Commission and adopted. So those ad accountability studies and the makeup of the commission and the process that we go through are 2 elements that I would point to right away, Representative Pham, to make sure that Travel Oregon is held to high standards and is accountable to the industry for the dollars that we're entrusted with.
Thank you. And Mr. Perry, since the connection is reestablished, what else would you like to add?
Yeah, for the record, Bill Perry, thank you, Chair. No, I was, Todd's second point was spot on, is that, I mean, the way that our commissions work in Oregon is each agency has a commission made up of the people that are supposed to oversee that particular function. So what the governor does will ask us and others about the experts that are marketing. So there's different people on the commission that are experts at it, and it's their responsibility to make sure that the dollars are being spent appropriately. And so they're made up of a lot of people that understand marketing from inside the industry and outside of the industry. So that's all I'd add.
Part of the question, it's about accountability, but that's also about outcomes. I have read studies in the past that show how investments have increased tourism and how certain either advertising campaigns or the addition of airline route from another country direct into Portland resulted in an increase, seemingly long-lasting increase in visitors. Can you share with us just 1 or 2 simple touch points for how the investments, how much difference they make, or has it been pretty static over the last 5 years? Of course, not counting 2020.
Chair Nathanson Perry, once again, I could look those up, but I think Todd knows some of them. So, I mean, most of the studies are done on advertising dollars, but, you know, I do want to say the other important part of the bill that you were involved with in the beginning was really the connection with the locals. There's a lot of stuff that goes on, like, you know, enhancing trails, and some of those things are not necessarily, I think you're going to be able to prove that that they increased visitor visits per se, but obviously there are things that are important to the local communities in different ways. But I would say that Todd has got some specific studies as it relates to advertising dollars or certain expenditures that he's probably better suited to answer.
Okay, thank you.
Chair Nathanson, if I may, Todd Davidson again. The the two examples that I would share, and there are many more. One is if you were to look at the research that we've done on international visitation to Oregon, both in terms of spending and in terms of visitors from other countries traveling to Oregon. And if you were to, you know, we run these analyses as a 5-year trend line. So we looked most recently at like 2014 to 2019. And if you looked across the United States, on average, total international visitation to the US grew roughly 3.5% to 4%, but in Oregon, it grew nearly 12%. And that's the addition of routes. That was demand that was generated not only through Travel Oregon's efforts, but as Bill noted, and as this committee has been discussing, the investment of local lodging taxes going into those marketing efforts. It's not only Travel Oregon going into these markets to promote Oregon. It's our partners in the regions and in the local destination marketing organizations, as well as the private sector businesses that are going with us on trade missions and sales missions, whether they're led by us, led by the governor, or led by our national travel and tourism office. The other example, quickly, would be the advertising accountability study that I referenced earlier. And again, these are studies that we undertake on a regular basis and are telling us that, for example, for every dollar, roughly, that we invest in our media advertising campaigns, we were successful in generating a new trip to Oregon. And that resulted in that $1 investment resulted in between $175 and $200 in new visitor spending. And this is spending where the visitors have told us we would not have come were it not for the state's advertising. So this is one instance where we're able to point directly to a program of Travel Oregon and speak to the impacts that we're able to bring. And of course, those visitor spending also means additional tax revenue that's being generated. So for that same dollar that was invested in our media advertising campaign, we were generating on average $10 to $12 in state and local tax revenue. And at the state level, it's personal income taxes, corporate income taxes, and fuel taxes. A lot of folks don't realize that roughly 20% of the state's highway fund is generated by visitors that are traveling throughout the state of Oregon. And then at the local level, it could be lodging taxes, rental car taxes, and in some cases, meals taxes.
Thank you. Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just going to share with the committee that based upon my casual observations of the work that's done, and sometimes actually close personal work that's being done by these folks, Oregon's getting a big bang for its buck. That's not scientific, that's not mathematical, but I can share with you in Northeast Oregon, in the Columbia Basin area, we've seen significant benefit as a result of this. Of this program. As a person who voted on the original bill many, many years ago, I could tell you it's right in line with what the legislature at that time envisioned. The one thing I would share is I know Representative Marsh's bill is trying to capture some of those out-of-state dollars, and I think at some point in time this committee needs to further that exploration to determine how do we make sure those folks who are coming to Oregon to utilize Oregon resources pay their fair share. And so I just want you to know, again, anecdotally, these folks have done a good job. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Smith. I see that Department of Revenue is still with us. I've got a question for you. Ms. Taylor, are you there? And Ms. Culver? Thank you. In Mr. Malik's presentation earlier, I'm not sure whether you were with us and watching the presentation that early on, but there was a slide describing the history of the legislation related to transient lodging tax, and there were several bills over the course of 2 or 3 years that were very administrative, and some of the impetus for those bills was to make sure that the administrative functions were supporting a level playing field. We were hearing from some lodging providers, for example, that they were paying their share in taxes, but there were others engaged in providing lodging to visitors who, it seemed, were not participating in paying their share. And in part, that was due to the new situation with intermediaries. Sometimes that might have been VRBO or Airbnb, but there were other intermediaries involved as well. So I don't want to pick on only two. But it was felt that it was demonstrated that there was evidence in some cases a provider may be paying a local transient lodging tax, but not the state tax, or the reverse, may be paying the state tax and not the local tax. Since we have implemented a number of the administrative changes, maybe some of it involved software, some of it was other statutory adjustments, do you have any evidence in what you're collecting that we are achieving a more level playing field among the providers?
Chair Nathanson, for the record, Xan Culver with the Oregon Department of Revenue. I think Marjorie and I were going to fight over who was going to answer this one.
Who was going to get out of it, huh?
Perhaps. I don't have the data with me today on the impact. I can tell you that we have engaged in sharing data with local governments. Unfortunately, there are not as many that local governments that have engaged with us in that data sharing. So that is legislation that passed in, I believe it was 2017. Last count, I think there are 10 local governments that were sharing information with us, and it does require that they give us information and we give them information. So that's one piece that we've implemented, and we also have brought up the local lodging administration program that just started at the beginning of this year. So we're in the very early days of getting local governments signed up for that with us. And then we, this last year in 2020, have entered into agreement for external data source, specifically to intermediaries or those online travel companies, where they estimate the amount of tax that we should be getting from them. And then we can look at what they're filing and follow up on that. We did also hire an auditor for the program. So, maybe not surprising to you, but the program had existed for a very long time, and we didn't have any audit resources dedicated to it. And we were able to do that because of the rate change that occurred in 2016. We had enough revenues coming in and within our 2% cap of administration that we were able to fill that position. And I don't have any numbers, again, with me today, but we'll certainly get that for you.
Thank you. Committee, as far as I know, that is the end of the witness list for House Bill 2500. Do you have any other questions or comments before I close the public hearing on this bill? Representative Pham.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, I just wanted to comment. This has been such an informative public hearing to help me understand the history of the transient lodging tax from 2003. And I've just been reflecting on the changes that we've seen since 2003. I think we've seen how new sites like Airbnb have, and VRBO, and all these other sites that help us now kind of democratize the lodging industry. It has impacted the supply of local housing. It has meant that more homes are put up on these websites, and it means that more rental units are also taken off the market, which reduces the supply of housing. So I am so glad that we're continuing to invest in tourism and is so clear that tourism can bring jobs and really needed investments. And at the same time, I just want to recognize that the tourism industry does place a burden on the local communities. And we want to make sure that as we're investing in these local communities, that we're also ensuring there's affordable housing in these areas where tourists are occupying many of the homes that used to be regular rentals. So I just wanted to make that comment, reflection, and flag that there is a transient lodging tax bill that I'm sponsoring that was assigned to the Housing Committee, which would invest in just 0.3% in affordable housing, specifically to the local counties that are hosting tourism, just to ensure that we're both ameliorating any of the negative impacts as well. Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you for your comment. Representative Reschke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm not quite sure who to direct this question to, so I'll ask it and let our guests draw lots, I guess, to see who gets to answer it. So in 2016, we went from 1.0 to 1.8 with an agreement at that time that we would drop down to 1.5 in 2020. And that increase to 1.8 was, I believe, to help out with a particular event that was going to happen to raise money for all the infrastructure and promotion, et cetera. So it was agreed to go back to 1.5. And now here we're at 1.5, requesting to go back to 1.8. So I'm wondering, is there another event or specific purpose for the additional 0.3% raise, or is it just to raise more revenue?
Chair Nathanson, I guess I can answer that question. The Bill Perry, once again, Oregon Restaurant. I don't know if there's a easy answer to that question, because there was as much as we all know, the legislative process kind of creates. We actually, at the time, as the industry, we were talking about potentially going from 1% to 2%. That's the bill that we introduced and worked with the governor and other, because as many of you have said, is there, you know, with the kind of a, what I would term as eroding local government promotions, you know, we were, as an industry, said, well, if we're really going to protect this money for promotions, we can tell about what benefits it has to the entire economy. And so when we go back to the first, as Todd can tell you, Todd and I, and I guess Representative Smith, were the one of the few that were still, that we did this in the beginning. Really, the conversation was spurred in the original 1% around the trying to open up European markets. So obviously, the track and field reference you gave kind of spurred the conversation to have this conversation again. So there was nothing particular in the bill that talked about the money going in there, but we knew that it was an expense and something that I think many people in the industry wanted to support. So, you know, there was never anything in there about these particular events. Now, once again, when we were looking at it last year, there could have been additional resources gone to the track and field event. You know, I'm not necessarily saying that this particular, obviously we didn't introduce this bill, so I'm not saying the industry has asked for it right now, but I would say that from my perspective, if we have another discussion somewhere down the road about increasing the state percentage, there's probably going to be something that's spurring that conversation to happen. I think most of our members understand if we can promote more, you know, the state will benefit from it, whether it's particular events or advertising. But, you know, I would just say that, you know, generally when we have this discussion again, there's going to be something that's spurring the conversation. Does that answer your question?
I think Reschke said thank you. Rep Pham, do you have another question?
I apologize. You know, I don't. I would just, yeah, I don't have a question. That my hand was still up, but yeah, thank you.
Okay. Anyone else? Mr. Allenack, have we gone through the entire witness list so that I can close the public hearing?
I believe you have. Just double checking. Yes, you've gone through the list.
Okay. I'm closing the public hearing on House Bill 2500. I'm opening a public hearing on House Bill 2521.
Yes, Madam Chair, I hope I'm back and you can hear me.
I can hear you. Yes, thank you.
That's always progress, I guess. So House Bill 2521, not a large or a strange bill, but it basically requires that the transient lodging tax collectors provide an invoice, basically a receipt, or like documents that clearly states all the transient lodging taxes charged for the occupancy of the transient lodging unit. And that's what the bill does, not a big one.
Okay. Committee, are there questions for Mr. Malik before we move to any public testimony? I don't see any yet. Representative Marsh?
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Nathanson. I'm going to proceed my comments on this bill by noting that my Capitol internet is dreadful today. I have moved all over my office trying to find out where the best place is, and I failed. So if I fall off the internet cliff, I will call in on my telephone. Am I still on?
Yes.
Okay. I see people sort of freezing, and I'm worried. For the record, I'm Pam Marsh. I'm the House Representative from District 5, Southern Jackson County. House Bill 2521 is the most recent in a series of bills, and you heard them described earlier by Malik, that we have considered and passed over the last few years to modernize the transient occupancy tax, also referred to as the transient lodging tax. Significant changes in the overnight accommodations industry, including the use of online portals and intermediaries, have required us to update our statutes to ensure equity between traditional providers, including hotels and motels, and new types of accommodations. House Bill 2521 is just the next step in this process. Very simply, as you heard, the bill requires that transient occupancy taxes that apply to a stay are clearly listed on the bill, invoice, receipt, or other document provided to the customer. The bill has three objectives. First, we want to provide consumers with a clear and transparent accounting of taxes paid. Second, we want to ensure that providers and intermediaries are applying taxes, including the state and local TLTs, to all non-optional services associated with the stay. Third, we want to make sure both state and local taxes are being collected and then submitted. In preparing for today's hearing, I took a look on Sunday at a dozen overnight accommodation listings in Ashland and Medford. The good news is that all of the listings I reviewed included a line showing taxes and fees. The bad news is that I found significant irregularities in the accounting provided. Sometimes the billing listed an amount that represented just the 1.5% state tax. In other cases, it included the local transient lodging tax, but not the state tax. In still another case, it was clear from my cell phone math that the obligatory cleaning fee had been excluded from the tax calculation. Please note that House Bill 2521 does not require that state and local taxes be listed separately. Instead, they can be indicated as a sum total on the bill. But all taxes need to be included in that total so that we have some assurance that they are being applied, paid, and ultimately submitted to state and local governments. House Bill 2521 is a very simple step to just address both transparency and tax enforcement. And I thank you so much for the chance to present. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Representative Marsh. I'm going to ask the first one. So the tax is on the bill. The customer or consumer, if it's on the bill, the consumer is paying it. Pardon me?
I'm sorry, I lost you.
Okay.
I didn't hear your comment, Chair.
If the tax is listed on the bill,
mm-hmm.
and the customer has paid it, you know, they pay cash, write a check, give their credit card number, they've paid the tax. Presumably, an audit would find that that full amount went to the appropriate state and local agencies, made its way back.
Chair Nathanson, yes, I think that's certainly that what we would hope. It's just an additional check on the system. Yesterday's conversation on the question around trust funds and holding individuals accountable when monies like this are not received, I think was just another indication of the importance of making sure as you go back and look at this that the customer was himself or herself charged for that tax and paid that tax. And then you know very clearly that the person holding those funds is responsible for not submitting them.
Thank you. And as you've also pointed out, is the tax being applied to the right charges? As you pointed out, there was a non-negotiable fee, a mandatory fee, but it was excluded incorrectly.
Correct.
From the total.
Yes. Yes, Chair.
Representative Reschke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Marsh, thanks for this bill. You may not know the answer to this. Maybe DOR does if they're with us still. And if not, then I'll send them my question via email. But it seems like this bill and the bill we looked at yesterday, 2131, was extending their DOR's authority with four other taxes, and I think one of those was TRT. So I'm just kind of wondering, do these bills help one another in collecting taxes that, I mean, remitting taxes that already been collected by the hotel or the intermediary provider?
Would you like Department of Revenue to respond? They are, it appears they are available.
I'll take an answer from anyone. How's that?
Ms. Culver, are you available?
I am. Thank you, Chair Nathanson and Rep. Reschke. The information from the transient lodging providers or the entity that is collecting that tax being put on the receipt, it will be helpful to us. I think it will be most useful in identifying those incorrect calculations where the tax is not being applied correctly. And also identifying those entities that are just not collecting it or not remitting it to us.
Thank you. And just a comment for the chair then, if we are to move these bills forward and work them, I would recommend we do that on the same day at the same time so that we can have this conversation again if we need to.
Thank you for that observation, suggestion. Other questions for Representative Marsh, LRO, DOR? I'm chuckling because all of a sudden I could hear a song from a very old musical, and I think Rep. Reschke knows which one. Any other questions or comments? Looks like we're getting close to closing the public hearing. Mr. Alanak, have I skipped anyone?
I don't think so, Madam Chair. I believe you've reached out to everybody.
Okay. One last call for committee questions or comments. I don't see or hear any. I'm closing the public hearing on House Bill 2521. Mr. Alanak, we did hear a few questions, a couple of ideas that might suggest a clarification or an amendment if one or another bill might move forward. But other than that, do you have any thoughts or additions before we close today's meeting?
I don't think so, Madam Chair.
Okay. All right. We've completed our business. There's nothing else on the agenda, correct?
Correct.
All right. See you tomorrow. Thank you. We're adjourned.